Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. Thanks for joining us this morning. You know, there was a lot of stuff on the news about our NFL and all of our sports teams and everything that are very disheartening. And then to add to the mix this amazing challenge that was delivered to support ALS, that so many people donated money for the research and to help with ALS, which has been around as long as I can remember. And things have happened that, again, sadly, reinforce the fact that there are some that walk among us that are just not nice people, not good people. And then there are some that walk among us that are confused and maybe have never been shown right from wrong. I don't know. So I want to talk about some of this today and lead into a week of talking about what we do in protection of our children, maybe even in some cases our children that have different things going on. You know, there's autism, attention deficit. There's all kinds of things today that we didn't know about when I was a kid. I mean, you know, there were sick kids in school with me. I remember the first time I met somebody who had epileptic seizures. It happened right in front of me, and I remember sitting there, I'm sure with my mouth hanging open. I was all of maybe like 7, and nobody explained anything to us. The teacher didn't say, it's okay, Susan's going to be all right. She just has, you know, like something going on in her body that causes that to happen. Nothing. No explanation whatsoever. I've often thought about that. I had to wait until the end of the school day and go home and tell my mom what happened. And my mom assumed that it was some kind of a seizure and explained to me that sometimes that happens to kids. And I remember for the very longest time, if I met somebody for the first time, I searched their faces to see if that may happen to them. So, you know, another opportunity to mention the fact that however you explain something to a child can literally make them or break them, can make them be okay with something or at least understand it on some level, or totally confuse them and in some cases even scare them. So let's bring Shell in and talk about some of this. And as I said, Tuesday, of course, will be Bullies to Buddies Day, which will be more about our behavior. Wednesday, I have a special guest, Raphael. He is involved in the media. He does a lot of court reporting for local channels, and he has a little boy who was diagnosed with autism, and I've been with him for a good part of that ride because when I first met him, he had just been diagnosed. And he wants to talk about the acceptance and the recognition of autism in some of our places, as, for instance, Disney World. Not only Disney World, many places, but that, of course, is the one that everybody can relate to. And Thursday, I want to talk about some more, a continuation of what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about the NFL star who beat his wife, then Robin Givens, who was married to what's his name, Mike, I can't even think of his name right now, but spousal abuse in that arena with these front and center healthy men who actually are abusers. So we're going to talk about all that this week. So if anybody has anything that they'd like to discuss, please don't hesitate to call in. Good morning, Shell.
Good morning, Rainey.
Did you have a great weekend?
Yes, I did have a great weekend. I was up in Orlando with my family for my niece's and my sister's birthday. So it was quite eventful. We did a lot up there. We stayed at the new Cabana Bay, which is one of Universal's hotels, but this is a family-oriented hotel, and it's done in a retro's 1960s way, so it's very colorful and retro, and they have these big screens all over the place, and they're playing all these old black and white and goofy commercials from, like, the 1960s, so it's they have these out in the front, they have, I think, six old cars parked out there, like 1957 Chevy and stuff like that. Really cool. So, and they have a beautiful water park in the back. So even if you're not going into the parks at Universal, which we didn't, the hotel itself is sort of a getaway. It's got an immense pool park in the back with a big water slide and a little lazy river ride. You can get on these like these round inner tubes, and you just sit in them and you go around. It takes you around the whole complex. But it was a lot of fun, and then we did a couple other things. We stopped at Gatorland on the way home, which was quite an adventure as well. And so it was very, very enjoyable, you know, out in the sun and everything. I have a little bit of a cold now, which I'm the last one in my family to get, so I'm kind of on my regimen of Golden Seal Root and quercetin right now. But other than that, I feel lucky that it didn't hit me until we came home last night, so I was able to get through the weekend very well, you know, participate in everything and feel good about it. So today I'll just take it easy after the show.
Yeah, I can hear it in your voice. It is tough right now to catch a cold because although today is much cooler than it has been in months, this very, very hot, sticky, humid weather has a tendency to fortify all the bacteria out there. So if somebody in your family gets a cold, almost always it goes through the whole family. So I hope you feel better today.
And I don't know of this is kind of unique to me and my family, but I had gotten severe sun poisoning, like, I don't know, 35 years ago. And I was really messed up by it. And, I was sick for like 3 or 4 days. My face actually turned purple. My lips turned purple. I was in bad shape. And now anytime I get a lot of sun, whatever virus was released by that sun poisoning is sort of dormant in my body. And if I'm in too much sun, I wear hats and stuff, you know, to try and stay it off. But if I get too much sun, it kind of like is a toggle switch and it flips that virus back on. It only takes me a couple of days to get it back in check. I have this regimen I do. I don't take antibiotics or anything. So within 48 hours, I'm usually perfect again. But it happens to me a lot of times if I get too much sun. It like I said, it's like an on-off switch for that virus that's in me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, they say that's exactly what a virus is, you know. It's just you can keep it in check or something can, wake it up. So,
yeah.
So today I've kind of laid a little bit of groundwork. I don't know if you know about this. This happened, a little bit over a week ago. And I've had it sitting in the sidelines because every day I had already had a show planned. So some bullies douse an Ohio boy with bodily fluids, cigarettes, and, feces, and horrific stuff, because they make him believe that he's doing the ALS ice bucket challenge.
Oh, for God's sake.
And they do a video that appears to be someone, but I've never been clear. I've watched it several times and researched it. I'm not clear as to whether or not the video that they put out is of this young man. He's 15, and he's a good-sized guy if this is him. And it appears as though this is supposed to be him, but that's not clearly stated. An Ohio teenager with autism thought he was taking the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge. But instead of water, a group of juveniles doused the 15-year-old boy with a mix of bodily fluids and cigarette butts, family members said Wednesday. The incident, which was recorded on the boy's cell phone, was released, well, I guess that's pretty safe that it is him, was released to KTLA sister station. The teen's family chose to share the video in an effort to make other parents aware of the bullying. In the clip, the shirtless teen is standing in front of a garage when from above comes a bucket full of liquid, according to the boy's family. It contained feces, urine, spit, and cigarette butts. Once we found out about it, we were horrified, the boy's mother told Fox 8. I want these kids held accountable for what they did to him and that they targeted somebody who just really didn't understand what was going on. A police investigation is underway and the criminal charges should be filed, according to Bay Village Police Department Detective Kevin Krolowski. Obviously, if possible, we do want to hold those individuals accountable for their actions. Now, right there is a get-out-of-jail-free card, that statement right there, because that's pretty much saying that they don't know whether they can or not. The teen's mother and father hope the release of the video will inspire other parents to talk about bullying with their own children. The bucket challenge is supposed to be raising awareness for this disease, and now they've turned it into a sick joke. I just can't understand why kids would do something this cruel. So what happened because of that is several celebrities have donated money to guarantee that the young men that did this to this 15-year-old will be punished. Now, here's the truth. All that sounds really nice, and if I just take it at face value, that sounds, well, isn't that nice, you know, a couple of celebrities jumped up to the plate and were appalled by this set of circumstances. But what does money have to do with catching and punishing somebody who does something like this? Why is money needed?
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. It's like when they say they've donated money to make sure they're prosecuted, Where did the money go? Where is the who gets that money to ensure prosecution? And like you said, why is a donation required? Doesn't our law enforcement take this stuff seriously? And again, we're calling something that's a crime bullying. They didn't bully that kid. They accosted him physically. That was depraved what they did. It's not funny in any way, shape, or form. And again, I'm on the same page with you. Why? I don't understand where the degradation comes from. Why one set of children would actually think something like that, first of all, was funny. I mean, obviously, they had to put some effort into preparing that batch. And you know what I'm saying? I mean, when you get a mob mentality, and that's what that is, okay, they can kind of like goad each other into doing things that if they were left to their own sensitivities and morals, they wouldn't do. It always shocks me what a mob mentality will do. It will take somebody who otherwise would be a decent or law-abiding citizen, and it inspires them to do things they would never have thought of because they get caught up in the excitement, the fervor of the moment or whatever. And I'm wondering what each one of those boys is like when they're not in each other's presence. It looks like they bring out the worst in each other to do such really horrific act on an innocent person who they deceived into thinking was doing something good. That makes it more reprehensible.
Well, so we have a couple questions here that I think are important to a story like this. First of all, do this other group of kids understand that they were dealing with somebody who has learning disabilities? My guess is yes. Do they understand what it is? My guess is no. But on the same token, even if it was just somebody who was immature or younger than 15, even if it was somebody who was like, you know, 10 and just thought it was going to be cool to be a part with the bigger kids and did something mean to them. The point is that we do all this talking in school, hopefully at home, in church groups, in on the media all the time, about, you know, being kind to people that look like they may need a little bit of help from you and certainly aren't up for a one-on-one with you. And yet, they're the ones that always seem to get, I don't want to use the word attacked, because they didn't really attack him.
They targeted him.
They just, that's the perfect word, targeted. They targeted him for some reason. Now, the other thing in the research that I've done to talk for today is I've actually heard, and I'm going to have to mesh these all together. I was going to try to do them separately, but it doesn't work because they all lend to the mindset of people that do certain things. You know about the NFL star that, of course, had the big fight with his wife in the elevator. Everybody knows about that. Rice is his name. And it's on video, and because the elevator had a camera in it.
Right.
And he spits in her face, and she slaps him, and he beats the hell out of her. And, of course, he was immediately, you know, taken off the ball team and all that kind of stuff and all this controversy. And, of course, hopefully, if he's got any sense at all, he feels like a jerk, which he should. But then there were some comments I heard from a woman that they interviewed, a young woman. Well, she slapped him. You know, if a woman's going to think she can take on a man, you know, like that, then she probably deserves whatever she got. And
wow.
I was like, wow. So, you know, I've listened to so many different things, and then we get the story about the NFL star who actually takes a switch off a tree branch, and whoops, his four-year-old with the tree branch.
Wow.
And the boy is battered. I mean, he's got open wounds. He's got bruises. He was beaten with the switch. He wasn't just switched on the back of his leg. Like, I had a lot of Southern friends. Their parents would say, "You want me to go get the switch?" And I thought to myself, I went home and said to my mother, "What's a switch?" And my mother said, "It's something some people believe, you know, they have you go pick the biggest switch in the yard and you're going to get spanked with it if you've done something bad." And my parents never did anything like that, but she explained that to me. And that was pretty Southern for whatever reasons. Well, now this young man, this NFL star, has Adrian Peterson, I think his name is. He has more or less said, "I did what was always done to me." Oh, well, so then that makes it all right, I guess, right? "Did you like it?" You know, is what the first thing I would have said to him. "Oh, and was it something that taught you a lot? Did you like it?" I would like to have somebody ask him those questions. But now he and lots of other media have expressed the fact that many times those kind of traditions, if you will, go through family after family after family. So I still have to question, you know, did everybody put a mental block in their head and think, well, you know, because I lived through it, then it's okay to do to my kid? Is that the mindset?
Well, see, this is one of the things that you hear about all the time. You know, you have kids that were abused, and some of them grow up to be abusers, and some of them grow up to be really loving parents because they saw that what happened to them was wrong, so they don't perpetuate it. You know, there has to be some level of sensibility to recognize that what's being done to you isn't right, and stopping the cycle. There are people that have gone through generations of abuse, and you see that it's happened, you know, and if you look at the family history, this you know, like switching or something like that, was done throughout generations, and then you get one individual who says, you know, no, this isn't right, you know, and they recognize, they see other people that they know it's not being done to, you know, other kids, you know, they talk, and they stop the cycle of violence, and that's what it is. And it takes a certain level of self-awareness and sensitivity to stop the cycle of violence, and that's exactly what it is. There's nothing that a child does, I'm sorry, especially a four-year-old, for God's sake, you know, there's nothing that a child does that deserves them to be injured. You know, it's one thing to swat them and get their attention at 4 years old, but when you use things like straps and like my girlfriend's mother used to use an electrical cord, and it would actually break the skin, and it would mark up the back of her legs terribly, you know. And I never understood that. How do you injure a child? I don't see that as being any different as taking a child's hand and putting it on a hot burner. You know, you do not teach a child right from wrong by inflicting injury. And I'm not totally against corporal punishment, but there's a big difference between swatting a kid with an open hand to make them turn around and you know, pay attention to you, and taking an object and injuring them with it. In the way I look at it, and everybody I've known that it's ever been done to has been injured psychologically more than physically. I don't believe that it's a practice that should be condoned.
Well, and the repetition of corporal punishment is what I'm against. If you do have a very, very, a child that is perfectly, everything is cool, there hasn't been any kind of diagnosis to lead you to believe that perhaps the child is having trouble understanding what it is you really do want from him, which happens sometimes. But everything seems to be good, and you see that the issue is pure and simple battle of the wills between you and that child. And let me tell you something. My Michael, when he was not even, well, he walked when he was 6 months old, but he was not walking great, would sit on my lap, and if I was talking to his brother or to his Uncle Danny, who were all right around the same age, to get my attention, he'd pull my hair. And I'd say, don't pull Mommy's hair. And I'd take his hand and get it all unclenched from my hair, and I'd turn my face to talk to him, and he'd pull my hair again. So after, you know, slapping the top of his hand and saying, that hurts, Mommy. Do you want to hurt Mommy? No. But the minute he wanted my attention again, because it worked the first couple times, he'd pull my hair again.
Wow.
So we actually, there were probably a good 3 times in the weeks to come where he would pull my hair and I would pull his. And we would both hang on to each other's hair, and he would pull really hard and I'd pull harder, and until, you know, he'd be looking at me, you know, to see if he was going to win, and I wouldn't let him win until he finally stopped. Now, you know, personality has a lot to do with how you treat your children. Obviously, I am in every way, shape, and form against abusing a child for any reason. But you do have to learn to understand who you're. I had 4 children, all 4 of them. Got different punishments, different reprimands, different conversations, because they're all different.
Yeah.
When Spike was 2, if we were going to a doctor's office, because Mikey was a baby by then, and I'd say, now you have to be good because mommy has to go in here and the doctor doesn't like it if you bring other kids, you know. He likes to be able to concentrate on the baby he's looking at, but I had no choice. So I would put a matchbox car in each one of Spike's pockets. And he would kneel down on the floor and just run the cars up and down my leg or the couch or wherever we were sitting and never make a peep. Now, doing that with Michael was a joke. You couldn't do that with Michael. You might have needed duct tape and a rope to keep Mike that sedated. So I had to deal with him in a different way, right?
Yeah, well, it's like my great niece right now, Bailey. She is, oh, my God, she's one of the most adorable children. I mean, I love all my nieces and nephews, obviously, but she's the youngest one right now, so she's really entertaining the family. She's very, very outgoing and kind of rules the roost. She's this little tiny person, and she just cracks the other two kids up. But she's a biter. If she's not getting your attention or you do something she likes, she tries to bite you. So yesterday I took her arm. She went to bite me, and I was holding her hand because I was trying to pull her over to me. She went to bite me, so I pulled her arm across, and she bit her own arm. And she looked at me. She was, like, really surprised. But, you know, so now if she bites, she does it playfully. She doesn't do it to hurt or to get your attention because she felt what it felt like. So now if she bites you, she doesn't even put any pressure. It's just what she does, and she'll grow out of it. Her sister used to do the same thing, and she grew out of it in a matter of a couple of months. But she didn't injure herself. She didn't break the skin, but it let her know. I wasn't going to bite her with my teeth. I let her bite her own arm so she could see what she was doing, and she got it, you know. And
that's a perfect comeback for many reasons, because like you just said, sometimes when parents you know, bite a child because they're biting them, I've done that, and I don't know when the realization hit me, but it came to me that they don't really know. They might think because you're bigger, you're biting harder. In the confusion there, so letting her bite herself was perfect. I don't know if you'll always have that opportunity, but that was the perfect solution because now she can judge how hard she bites, and
right,
that will
right.
make the difference. So, but at any rate, this gentleman that switched his four-year-old, he talks about the history. And immediately it became a black thing, immediately. Now, I want to say with my own mouth and my own brain and my own input, all of my Southern friends, when we moved to Miami when I was 11 years old, every one of my Southern friends who were either born in Florida or Georgia and moved to Southern Florida, but who were really Southerners, whose fathers made moonshine and moms made homemade biscuits, and they were really Southern, they all got switched, and they weren't black.
Mm-hmm.
But they did get switched. And I always thought, you know, I used to say, he was a boy, his father would send him into the yard to get a switch, and he'd come back with a great big switch. And I'm sitting there, and they go in the bedroom. He switches the backs of his legs. And sometimes he would have shorts on, and it wouldn't really hurt him. And this friend of mine just thought it was kind of funny. And so I never saw any kind of abuse like that. But he came out, so we're walking out of the house, and I said, you know, if my mother told me to go get a switch, I'd get some little tiny twiggy thing. Why did you get such a big switch? You know, and he went, oh, I never thought of that. That's a good idea.
Oh, God.
So, you know, again, abuse is abuse. If you believe that however you deal with the personality of a child, if you believe what you're doing is helping and you're not leaving marks, you're not, you know, it's not a beating, a whooping, as this young man stated, then I guess part of that should be your right. But, of course, the only time you can give out rights and know that they're taken the way that they need to be taken is when you have the opportunity to know who you're dealing with, and that's not ever going to happen. There's no way we can, you know, I mean, even the people that say to me every day, you know, I leave my life in God's hands, and I look at them and roll my eyes, you know, I think to myself, oh, yeah, just what he wants to do, sort through your mess. You know, you
can't. People remember the old adage, God helps those who help themselves. You don't relinquish responsibility for your own life. You know, I mean, I believe in a higher power. I believe in God and all that.
So do I. Yeah.
That God wants us to be self-aware and clean up our own messes. You know, if you make a mistake, realize you made the mistake and make adjustments going forward. That's how you grow as a person. That's how you end up learning more and becoming a better person as you go on with life. But if you never admit that you make a mistake, that means you never do anything to do things differently, which means 20, 30 years later, you haven't improved. You haven't bettered as a human being. You know, I learn something new every week, and I make adjustments in my attitude, and, you know, something I did maybe 20 years ago, I don't do anymore because over time I realized it wasn't appropriate, it wasn't a good reaction. It didn't do me any good. It didn't do the other people involved in a particular set of circumstances any good. And so I'm one of these people that, you know, I'll look at what I did and say, well, you know, I probably could have handled that better. And because I go there, I make adjustments going forward. But what about the people who can't go there, who don't admit they made mistakes, and they just keep perpetuating the same bad behavior over and over and over, and their life never improves, and they never improve as a person, you know? But the main thing
is... Okay, so everything you're saying, of course, I'm in agreement with, and you and I have talked about all these things so many times. We all make mistakes. We all do things in the heat of the moment. We've all done things that we're so wish we could take back.
Right,
we can't, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that now I'm seeing this. I'm seeing this trend this morning on a show that millions of people watch every day, and I'm mystified. I realize it's media's job to, you know, to shock and alert and get everybody's attention. That's the whole idea. That's why there's 1,479 channels on our TV, so we can get all these different points of view from the media. So I get that. I get that it's become big business and all that kind of stuff. But why give any credence to somebody who says, well, I mean, he's still in trouble. It didn't get him out of trouble. But why give any, I don't know, space, airtime, conversation, attention, all of those words to somebody who says, a four-year-old's pretty little kid. I mean, you know, four is pretty young. Not even in school yet, hasn't left home, I mean, unless they're in a daycare or something like that. Beat them bad enough with a stick, with a whippy stick, so that he has marks all over him and broke the skin in some places, according to the reports. Now, we should have been given all that because that is, you know, people want to know when people that they are applauding as being a figure in our society that we have some respect for, sports people and movie stars and all of those kind of people. So we need to know what he did wrong, but do we really need to give him airtime to say, well, you know, my mother beat me, it was the Southern way. And black women, if I heard this once this morning, I heard this 10 times. Black moms and grandmas beat us with a stick. Right or wrong, that's what they did. And I thought to myself, so is that your way of telling us that that's okay? It isn't okay.
It
wasn't
okay
for them, and it isn't okay for you.
Yeah.
You
and
know,
I,
and
this is that was he was 4 years old and did it break his skin? You know, one of the things you've seen happen is that vibration.
Oh, sorry,
if they don't...
Chewy. I ran my chair over Chewy's foot.
Mm. Aw.
And he's such a baby.
Yeah.
So, did he? They don't. He doesn't. I didn't hear any reports as to whether or not there was any kind of,
Because
I moved my chair and hit him.
If he was reprimanded that badly, at some point he should have realized that that wasn't right. And if he wasn't reprimanded that badly, then he's taking. He's taking how he was disciplined, and he's, taking it up a notch, which is not appropriate. And how do you have a child and not be protective of that child? I know that the children can be very, very taxing, and that they can get on your nerves. But there's a big difference between turning around and backhanding a child, which certainly isn't appropriate either, and actually beating them to the point where you can see that you're injuring them. That kid must have been screaming. What goes on inside an individual's mind that they can perpetrate that type of harm, and there's no safety valve. There's no, oh my God, I'm going too far here. And then he's just, mm-hmm. instead of the horrible, and I guess I went too far, he's justifying his actions. So if he feels remorse, it doesn't sound like he's stating that yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, but again, not all of us are adult enough, no matter how old we are, to say, yeah, I can't believe I did that either. That takes a lot of courage. That takes a lot of different assets that I know a lot of adults that don't possess those kind of assets. So even if he feels that way inside, he's afraid to say it out loud. And he may have. I haven't, everything I heard was second person this morning. They do not show him on any of the reports I watched, him actually saying the words or giving the excuse, or it's been secondhand reporting after he said what he said. But let
curiosity,
me say...
how did the media anyway?
Say that again?
Who took it to the media? Was this kid taken to the hospital, or... did one of their family members, how did this get discovered by the media?
I'm not sure, because he's a star and because there was paparazzi around, probably. But I don't know the answer to that. I've not seen any reports on how it came or whether he was taken to a doctor or a hospital or anything like that. I didn't see
how it all
came to light.
Yeah,
that would be that. Well, and that will come out because everybody's still talking about it like crazy. But the other thing that got me angry, not really angry, but annoyed, is the fact that he's blaming history and he's making it a part of Black history. And I'm not a Black woman, but I'm sick and tired, really sick and tired of people making a difference there, saying, well, he's Black, that's why he did that, or she's Black, that's why she did that. I'm tired of that. And I'm a white woman. And if the Black friends that I have talk to me like they're tired of it too, why would you be in the face of the entire public and say yet again something that probably doesn't really ring true, but also puts a bad, bad component into the history of Black people again.
Right.
It really does. It makes them, and I know one of the things I've always respected, as a matter of fact, about Black families and a lot of my Spanish friends, is the closeness of a family. Often, grandma and grandpa are in the house, like it used to be years ago for all of us. And I believe in that. I believe a family is a family until they're gone. And then they're still your family, but they don't have to be, in your life every minute. I hate when I hear somebody says to me, oh, do you see your grandchildren? I'm like, of course I do. Oh, I haven't seen my grandchildren ever. They live in Canada, and I've never seen them. One is 6 and one is 7. I'm like, you never flew to Canada to see your grandchildren? No. What the hell's the matter with you? So,
I know.
You know, but so I like the fact that they stick together. And there's nothing tougher than a good, in my opinion, a good Negro mom or grandma. They're awesome. They keep a good home. They don't, you know, they're strong, they're capable, and they know how to keep their children safe most of the time. Now, if you look at our news and you look at everything that's happening in the world, you don't see a lot of that. And there are people that would say to me, you're crazy, you know, it's terrible out there. Well, it is. But I'm sorry. Look at death row. Look at mass murderers. How many of them are black, Shell?
Yeah.
So, you know, but that's what gets me. I know that we're hopefully moving towards something that's more user-friendly, the way we set up this life of ours. But when I hear the people that need to be saying positive stuff about themselves, blaming their history for why they just beat the shit out of their kid with a stick, I'd like to beat them with a stick.
Well,
you know,
the bottom line,
I mean,
one of, you know, I was actually engaged to a black man when I was younger. He and I had been best friends for like 16 years. He ended up having getting very sick, and he passed away just before we were supposed to get married. So it was something that took a long time for me. But he grew up in a professional family. All of his sisters were business people. His mom was a business person, you know, and he grew up in that. He was very tolerant of bigotry. You know, like people would say things, you know, because we were a black and white couple, and he was very tolerant of it. I wasn't. It used to tick me off that people thought they had a right to make disparaging comments about that. It was none of their business, you know. This was a very decent man. I had been married to a white man, who was not good to me. So here I had a black man that I was dating and had gotten engaged to, and he was very intelligent. He treated me wonderfully, you know. So what difference does it make what his skin color is, you know? I liked the way he treated me, and I didn't like the way the white guy that I had been married to treated me, and that's why I divorced him, you know. He wasn't good to me.
Oh,
it always shocked me that people, you know, go black, white, because it's the individual. I'm sorry, you can meet a thousand black people and have them all be of a lower mentality or, you know, not intelligent or maybe even criminal in nature. But just because that's all you've been exposed to, maybe because you live near a particular area of town where that seems where there's too much drugging and that kind of stuff going on. But what about all the doctors and lawyers and scientists and police that are blacks that are just as knowledgeable, just as ethical and capable as any other ethnicity, you know? And I've never understood why people will take the actions of even a group and now they meet you because you look like that group and then they make some sort of judgment call on you. I've never understood prejudice or bigotry, and I've met groups of blacks, I've met groups of Jews, I've met groups of Chinese, I've met groups of all different types of people that, for one reason or another, I didn't think acted well, didn't act properly or in a kind way, but the next person of that ethnic background that I met, I didn't lump into the thing. I am one of these people that when I meet you, I'm starting on square one again with you. I'm starting fresh. And I'm going to judge you on how you act and how you talk and how you interact with me, not based on the other 100 people that looked like you. And so prejudice to me is, I just can't wrap my brain around it. I never have been able to.
Yeah, well, that's how I feel. But the point that I don't want to lose sight of is the fact that, you know, I can't imagine that the people that feel the same way we do can understand why somebody would blame their history of poor behavior on their behavior today. It just and say it like it's okay. Not, you know, well, I'm sorry, I fell into this life of abusive behavior because this is how I was treated. That's been established. We get that. The Mental Health Association talks about it all the time. So do psychologists and psychiatrists. You know, the repetition of behavioral patterns is, you know, can, like, be programmed right into us, and I get all that. But to use it as an excuse is what I don't like.
And I agree with that, especially because, like you said, he's wrong by saying that it's because he's black is wrong, because it's a Southern thing, not a black thing. And like you said, I know white people that were reprimanded in that way as well, and I don't agree with it. You know, like you said, if they're just stinging the kids and getting their attention, that's one thing. But once you start breaking the skin, leaving marks, leaving welts, leaving bruises, that's too much. That's just too much. And you don't teach a kid anything by injuring them. All you do is you teach them to be afraid of you, and you teach them to be sneakier. They're gonna, because they're still gonna do what they're gonna do, but they're gonna do it in a way they're gonna really try not to get caught by you. So you're not teaching them any morals by injuring them physically. If anything, you make them more rebellious. And then as soon as they're out...
What you also do, you turn them into sneaky liars.
Exactly.
Is what you really do in essence, yes.
I agree with
that. That is the
truth. Because I've seen that in kids that were reprimanded severely. They become sneaky adults.
Yeah.
You know, that is not the way to teach morals to somebody.
So... And then the deal, we're going to have to do, I'll try to find out some more stuff about the punishment of the boys who did this crime to the autistic boy. And as I mentioned, I've got Raphael on the show. He worked for the Sun Sentinel for a very, very long time. Well, he still works for the Sun Sentinel, but now he does a lot of the courtroom business, you know, for the high-profile trials and things like that. And his little boy, when I, way back like 4 years ago, 5 years ago, when he was one of the first reporters that I let come interview me at Hippocrates, because when he was persistent at the hospital, and he did a lot of things that, you know, I said, you can't bother us right now. We're, you know, we're scared and we're worried and we don't want to talk to anybody. And he respected that. And then the first story that he wrote, he really said what I said, and I told him, the only reason I'm letting you come in here is because when you reported, you didn't put words in my mouth or in Valerie's. You said exactly what we said, and I want to, you know, I want to respect that by giving you another interview. So we've become friends through the years, and he shared with me when his child was diagnosed on the autistic, not really suffering from full-fledged autism, but like an autistic spectrum that they have.
Right.
And he has two boys, and he has an older child, a daughter. And they go to Disney World and stuff like that. So he wants to talk about the acceptance of how they make things flow better when you have a disabled or handicapped child of any nature, whether it's physical or autism or any kind of disability when you're in a big place like Disney World or any of the other parks. But he mentioned Disney World because they just went to Disney World, and he said, I want to talk. He says they think that they're doing good things for them, but if your child is one of those kind of children who looks perfectly normal, like a lot of autistic children do, then, you know, then that that support kind of breaks down. So he's going to talk about that on Wednesday. But I wanted to make sure that everybody knew about the story with the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge and that what happened there. And then these deals with these NFL stars. Now, in support of sports celebrities, and this is only my opinion. I have never had anybody say this to me, but I can't imagine that it's not true. That is the fact that when you are in the public eye and you have to have your everything pumped up to the point of no return to play a game of football, to be in a boxing match, to excel, your body has to excel and do things that in a lot of cases nobody's ever done before. You have to run hard, you have to hit hard, you have to play hard, and then all of a sudden you're supposed to get off the field or get out of the ring or get off the court and just, you know, do bring it all right back down to normal. How easy is that for people, honey? How easy? I worry about
I think part of the problem with that is I think a lot of these guys are on steroids. And I think the steroids make them act out of control. I don't know if that's the case with this guy or not, but some of the other cases of guys who beat up their wives. There was one very famous one. This is going back years ago, and he was on steroids, and it was roid rage. They can't control their tempers. It makes them a better athlete because it increases their increases a lot of their ability to be stronger, think faster, and things like that. But it's got nasty side effects, and one of them is that it causes this uncontrollable anger. Now, if he's not on steroids, because like I said, I don't know this particular guy's issue, then the other part of what you were talking about, just from a psychological standpoint, they're in a very aggressive sport, and the body itself can do that to you. You release all types of hormones and things like that and natural steroids in the body to get geared up for a sport that's aggressive. And exactly right. I mean, how do you just turn it off, you know?
Exactly.
And if they're still in that mode, they can, if they're not the type of person that, again, that's self-aware and self-responsible, they'll just give in to that aggression.
Well, and I don't want to go to steroids, and of course I know that is a side effect, and I've had my own experience with steroids because steroids is something that people with bad backs, damage done internally often are put on prednisone and things like that, which are steroids. So,
yeah, but I'm talking I forgot the word for it, the type of steroids that make your muscles grow. I'm not talking about anti-inflammatory.
Right. Yeah.
They're totally different.
Right. Well, but they're still a roid. And the prednisone, honey, can do terrible things to your personality. Prednisone can make you mean and angry and make you short-tempered. The same kind of things that the muscle steroids do, prednisone can do, especially after prolonged use. That's why most of the time they're given in doses that is like 7, 6, 5, 4, so you get weaned off them again because they have terrible side effects, but they're an amazing innovation. But what I really want to talk about is the natural, the everything that gets pumped up when you get yourself to that place. No drugs, no nothing synthetic. Just what your body produces, your mindset and your ability to pump yourself up to get ready to do something. And then just because you move from one venue, the football field, to your living room, doesn't mean it's gone. And
I also think that's individual, Rainey. I don't know if you ever saw the movie.
Sure.
Blindside about Michael Orr. Michael Orr was a huge, or is a huge football player, very powerful, but he was truly a gentle giant, and he was actually nice to his competitors. If he knocked a guy down, he would put his hand out and help him back up on the field. I mean, that's just like who he was, you know. So there's also a propensity of certain guys to take it too far because it's their personality makeup. It's not only because of the sport. It's also because, so they might have been overly aggressive even if they weren't a football player or a hockey player or something like that, because it's kind of their personality to begin with, and it's just being exaggerated because of their participation in that particular sport. I think it's, again, it's the individual, not the sport.
Well, I'm not blaming it on the sport. That's why I mentioned so many different ones. I mean, there's everything from even somebody who is an avid workout aficionado, somebody who goes in and pumps 400 pounds and then walks on a treadmill and, you know, goes 10 miles an hour and then, you know, jogs around the block and does all this kind of stuff. It's the natural hormones and the adrenaline and everything that gets them zipped, pumped, ready to go, ready to take on anything. And it's all, I'm not talking about anything that's done synthetically. And I don't care where they are to do it. I'm not blaming a sport. I'm not blaming anything other than what your body is capable of doing for you. But what it isn't capable of doing is there's no on and off switch. You have to work up to where you get to when you're out there playing ball or working out or doing whatever you're doing. It's gradual to build you up to that epitome of virility and strength and speed and all that kind of stuff. Then you walk out, and you've still got to have that time to bring it back down again, is my point. So when things and I'm not giving excuses for poor behavior, I'm just trying to look at both sides of a story.
Right, but in that regard, when you're talking about winding down, appropriate workout routines have what's called a cool-down period, whether it's 2 minutes or 10 minutes. I mean, I've actually seen programs that had a 10-minute cool-down, and they've proven that regular exercise routines, like working out on a treadmill or, you know, yoga and things like that, actually release endorphins that make someone feel more in control, more at ease with life. But like bodybuilding is something different now. When you're just pumping the physical body to the maximum of what it can do, that I correlate to like football and all these really, really strenuous sports like football and hockey that actually inspire aggression in a human being, you know. Not all workouts inspire aggression. Some workouts actually do the opposite, where they release endorphins in the body that would actually make you feel at ease with life and put you in a better frame of mind. So it's not all exercising. It's aggressive.
Of course not. Of course not. And I understand the worth of that, too. But that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the ones that go overboard, that are working towards something, that are superstars, that want to be this, and then they're expected to just turn around and be another that laid back, you know, instead of having all that built up. It's aggressive. It's aggression that builds up inside of you. And to turn it back off again, there's no on and off switch. I'm all for doing the kind of, you know, I talked about this with somebody this weekend about yoga and meditation. After we did the conversation with a moment of silence with our new friend Abraham, we talked about that. And I said, you know, this is so important today because there's so many things that make us aggressive. But these people that do this in the world of entertainment and sports and all that kind of stuff, they're in a different league all by themselves. We got to go, though. We are out of time. Bullies to Buddies tomorrow and a special guest on Wednesday. And I really want to talk about spousal abuse on Thursday. There was a lot of stories from a lot of wives of support people and actors that were on TV this past week. So we'll do some research on that and talk about some of that. But go out and have a great day, everybody. God bless, and we'll be back tomorrow. Thanks, Shel. Feel better, honey.
Oh, I will. Thanks, Renee. Have a great day, everyone, and we'll speak to you again in the morning.
Bye-bye.